Behind the scenes of Kansas State athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus, making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
State Nation, it is KUV here on the Purple Project Podcast, episode 69 of this podcast, all about Kansas State athletics, here recorded late Central Time Zone here in Manhattan, Kansas. That is me, Eddie Greer, here, host of the Purple Project Podcast. Welcome in, K-State fans and others who have been enjoying this podcast for quite a while. If you're new to the podcast, this podcast is all about the latest around the campus, sports-wise, about Kansas State athletics. Of course, the Purple Project Podcast. Find it wherever you get your podcast. We're on Apple, Spotify, Audio Boom, iHeartRadio, Amazon, and more. The Purple Project Podcast here, rolling into the end of the first week of November. It's already November. And we're pretty much 2 months away from bringing in another new season, as my co-host somehow just, for some reason, he got logged out of here. He'll call back in here shortly as my phone goes off. So now, as on cue, let's go ahead and bring him on in here right now here, wasting no time. My co-host for the weekly edition of Triple P, Alex Aiden. Dallas Willard, Alex, what's going on?
And reconnected. So I'm going to try to check. I remember an episode where this happened one time where the phone kept cutting in and out, like the entire episode. I don't know what it was doing. So I'm going to try to move rooms to avoid that happening again. Because we got a lot of good stuff to talk about. We got a lot of good stuff to talk about today. We got what? We got KU. KU K-State football. We have got K-State basketball, which is now underway. It's not fully underway. We had our exhibition game. And you just won the World Series. So, you've been busy. Congratulations on that, Eddie.
Thank you on that.
The World Series win, that is. I remember when the Royals won it in 2015. That was a very sweet feeling. So, that is good, well-deserved. I was cheering your Braves on. Former Royal, Jorge Soler, got the World Series MVP. So, there you go. Love it. But, yeah, Eddie wanted to say that to you. Apologize, everybody. My thoughts are all over because I'm literally moving from one spot to another right now. But yeah, basketball, yeah, caught a little bit of the exhibition game against Pitt State. And yeah, the team looked okay. Looked pretty good. We'll see what happens next week when they take the field. And you know what? We'll see if Lance Leipold doesn't get fired from KU if K-State beats him. Because the last 2 weeks, Eddie, K-State teams face K-State. K-State wins. Coaches get fired. So better watch out, Lance Leipold. You don't want to be number three. Don't want to be three in a row. But Gary Patterson, how crazy that he that he is out at TCU. That's just crazy the way that came about. But and finally, I think I'm still undefeated. I still have every single game right this year for K-State football. We'll see if I can keep that streak rolling this week.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you're on quite the roll. You're quite the roll in the K-State predictions right now. As I'm going to scroll, I'm going to do two things at the same time here while I'm talking. Yeah, so Alex mentioned basketball preseason beginning tonight for the K-State men's basketball team. A lot more football later. Yes, Alex mentioned two coaches getting fired in a row after we beat them. Texas Tech, apparently, Matt Wells is on a short leash, we all thought. So he's out. And then
course, last week, kind of a little bit of a shocker to me that Gary Patterson got ran out after K-State lost there. Again, we'll have more thoughts momentarily on that, leading into the Lance Leipold Lawrence here in less than 48 hours. Okay, so back to basketball. K-State basketball kicking off in the preseason mode against Penn State. And K-State took care of Penn State tonight. 78-59, your final score of the ball game here. And, of course, we're going to have a lot more in-depth talk about basketball in probably the upcoming near future of the podcast here as, of course, the 2021-22 campaign begins for Bruce Weber and, of course, for the men in Jeff Mitty, the head coach of the women's basketball team, gets set for that. But anyways, here, real quick here, Selma Miguel leading the way with 18 points. Then Logan Landers, a recruit that was recruited last year, he scored 11 in this one. And then, as I mentioned in the Daily Today, Ish Masood had 10 points for K-State in this ball game, and leading scorer for Pitt State was Antonio Gibbons with 13. I'm going to go ahead and round. Get some key stats here. K-State shot the ball 45% from the field, 33% from downtown, and from the free throw line, not too shabby, 66% from the free throw line, 47-31 rebounding. K-State had advantage in that, 13-9 offensive rebounds in favor of your Wildcats. And man, that's just a short of the straw on that note there. So like Alex said, not too shabby at all. Knockings for some of the young guys that was here last year, knocking the rust off a little bit. And some of the transfers and new guys contributing a little bit there against Pitt State. I know, Alex, we're going to talk more about, go a little more in depth with given the consistency of time, but kind of here real quick, give me a key or two. I'm just gonna throw it out here. Actually, scratch that. Okay, so here we go. I'm gonna put you right on the spot. So given the momentum that K-State built last year at the end of the season, obviously that's the time you gotta get hot. Ask the Atlanta Braves that question. K-State, they rode off a couple big wins and then took Baylor to the limit in the Big 12 tournament last season. So does this group of players that Bruce Weber has right now going into the year, preseason prediction, since you got all the K-State football right so far, with Selma Miguel, obviously, Nigel Pack, Damian Bradford and company, and Mike McGurl, and you have all these transfers like Masood, Mark Smith and company, and I know there's two more on there. Do they have a chance, or is this team an NCAA tournament team?
Well, good question. I think they need to be for Bruce's sake. I think that if they don't make the NCAA tournament, and I could be incorrect here, I'd be really good, but if they don't make the NCAA tournament, it's hard for me to see Bruce coming back. It really is after the last two seasons that they've had, kind of building this thing back up. And listening to Bruce talk, and Bruce is talking about, you know, this is a new team, this is a good team, I think this is going to be a good team. He's talking more confidently about this team than I've heard him talk about any of the past two teams. And so he seems to think they're going to be better despite them being picked preseason 9th in the conference, which kind of surprised me. I thought they'd be on the lower end. I didn't think they'd be as low as 9. I thought they might be 7 or 8. But yeah, they need to. They need to make the NCAA tournament for Bruce's sake. Do I think that they will make the NCAA tournament? That is a great question. And I think they're going to be a bubble team. I think they're going to be a bubble team. I think they're going to be on the bubble. I don't think they're going to finish 9th in the Big 12. I don't. I think that they're going to be higher up. I think some teams are getting a little bit of merits on some name recognition, in my opinion, and just kind of based on what teams did last year, I think that there's kind of a bit of a stigma among some of the people who voted for that on kind of what K-State did last year. You and I know this team is so different from last year's team, and we know how they finished, and I don't think a lot of people are aware of that. So I don't think they're going to finish 9th in the Big 12. I think that that's really low. But will they make the NCAA tournament? I think they're going to be right on the fringe. I think they're going to be a bubble team, a middle-of-the-pack Big 12 team. And I am going to, if you had to put me on the spot, I mean, I had to say yes or no. I am leaning towards no, they're not. But I'm leaning more towards NIT range for this team than NCAA. With that said, though, if things come together for them, they absolutely can be an NCAA team. They absolutely can. I am just in my mind, I see things going wrong somewhere down the line. Injuries, whether it's injuries, whether it's players in a slump, or whether it's Bruce getting in his own way, or just something that might just derail it enough, you know, enough to kind of push them off of that. I think that some things may need to go right for them to make the NCAA tournament. So I think it can happen. I think they can get there, and that would be a successful season if they could. I think they'll be there right on the fringe, but I'm going to lean no prior to the season. But it's going to be close. It's going to be close.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. The swing is, for me, no, but I think they're going to be right there with the NIT, possibly the last four, final four, and more likely than so as well. Just looking at this roster here, obviously, up and down, you got transfers, you got obviously the big three, Miguel, Pack, and Bradford, sophomores now, and you're going to get help from these transfers like Masu, like I talked about, and then the other one was Marquise Noel, who's one of the transfers in there as well. And then let's not forget about Carlton Lingard, Siri Lewis, who played last year, and Lucas Scoopy.
I got it right that time. Okay, Kazuki. Okay, yeah. You and I went over this all last year.
Yep, and we're starting off. We're going to have to go over again.
We're picking up where we left off.
Got to knock the rust off a little bit. He's a sophomore as well, so I think they're going to be, I'm right there with you, middle of the pack, and this is just me guessing because I haven't looked more in depth at all the rosters for the basketball. It really more focused on the Big 12 more than anything else, given a lot of coaching changes in the offseason and whatnot. So they're going to be right there in the middle of the pack, obviously. So, I'm with you. If we don't see improvement, this group right here, with the core group that we just mentioned, and they have, of course, Mike the super senior, the Skylar Thompson of the basketball team, that is Mike McGurl on there as well. He wanted to come back. There's a lot there. Obviously, I mentioned Logan Landers, the recruit from Wisconsin. He's right there as well. And then you have Maximus Edwards, also a freshman here. Just name a few. I pretty much almost named the whole entire roster except a few. But yeah, just looking up and down, there's potential there for this team to take the next step. So it's going to be another interesting year for Bruce Weber. And I know a couple people want him gone a few years ago. And yeah, you have a year like that, like last year. Obviously, you take out the end of the year out, then this could be serious trouble. So, I mean, you want, as the rebuilding process go, you want to continue, as we like to call it, say, the building blocks, right? You want to continue to go up. You don't want to go down. You go down, and that's issues for everyone. But if that's the good news there, if I hear what you're saying was right there, than, well, actually, Fitz said that this core group is more gelled within each other than anything else. That I just listened to the podcast just before I hit record. So that's a good sign, right? That's a good stepping stone right there. Is everyone is in sync with one another. And hey, if we're all in sync, we can get this thing done. We can get this basketball program moved in the right direction. Now, with football still going on, we'll touch on that here after this. You know, it's still kind of a, I mean, we've won two in a row, obviously, that we needed to get, and we got to get KU on Saturday. So, but yeah, if you can, if this team can just learn from their mistakes from last year, their growing pains, right? If they can do that and incorporate them in this year, then we can possibly see what we saw at the end of the year last year. This team can play with a rate the point like an Oklahoma, play with a team like a Baylor. So it's going to be Alex is going to be interesting to see what happens. I know it's only preseason, but as K-State fans, K-State Nation, Basketball Nation is wondering, you know, they want to see a competitive team at the least.
They do. I mean, you nailed it. They want to see competitive basketball. We haven't seen that the last couple of years. See, people want, when I say people, I mean K-State, you know, K-State alums, K-State fans. They want a competitive team on the court. And that has just not been there the last couple of years. Yes, last year's team looked better near the end of the year. But you still can't say that was a competitive team. I mean, come on. I mean, they finished practically the bottom of the Big 12. And so this team has to, at the very least, be competitive in the conference for Bruce to be safe. And, you know, I think that watching a little bit of tonight's exhibition game, I think there's some things to be encouraged by. You mentioned Selton Miguel with 18 points. He was 6-9 from the field. If he can score like that, Eddie, once again, you only can look so much into an exhibition game. So take everything with a grain of salt. I'll say that right off the bat. But if you can get more scoring from Selton Miguel, that just raises your floor that much more. I mean, you look down there, you know, Davion Bradford didn't play because he's sick. But if you can get Davion Bradford and Eziagu as a 1-2 punch down there, down low, that can be a nice 1-2 punch. I know Lingard's hurt. He's going to be out for a while. That's a blow. But I think K-State can still absorb it. And you mentioned Ismail Sood. I think he's going to be a big piece for them as well. Didn't shoot the ball great tonight, but definitely an energy guy, a guy that can make a lot of plays. I think that he was on the plus minus. I think he was like plus 23 tonight, which was second for K-State behind Selton Miguel. So definitely his presence was being felt on the court, even though he was 3-9 from the field, 1-5 from 3. So eager to see what he can do. You mentioned Mark Smith. He's one of those transfers. He's a guy. He's a sharpshooter. He can shoot the ball. He doesn't just shoot threes, Eddie. He can shoot some deep threes. And if we know something about K-State's team last year, they could make a lot of threes. They could not make a lot of threes. It was pretty damn ugly. And they shot a ton of them. They wouldn't stop shooting them. It was like, guys, you can't make them. Stop shooting the three ball.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
The good news is they got guys that can shoot the three ball. They've got Marquise Noel. I think it's Marquise Noel, as I said. You got Marquise Noel. You got Nigel Pack. You got Mark Smith. You've got Mike McGurl. You've got more guys, more depth. Luke Kazuki, hopefully his shot's back this year. Even Logan Landers. You mentioned Logan Landers. He looked really good in the game today. And, you know, if you can get these guys who can shoot the ball, K-State from the field was nearly 54% in the first half, and it tailed off in the second half, but, you know, and it looked like 39%, but they had some, a lot of the kind of the backups in. So, I think you only gleaned so much from that, but all in all, they shot the ball pretty well. And Eddie, Bruce has mentioned that this is a good defensive team. He's mentioned it multiple times. This is a good defensive team. And if they're that good defensively, which last year they struggled defensively, and I think we all know that. Bruce was open and honest about it. He was open and honest about it. They weren't good. But usually Bruce's teams are good defensively. So this is back to vintage Bruce. shooters on that roster. So, you know, I think it depends on, you know, how quickly do they gel? How quickly are they able to, you know, build confidence, build that, you know, that camaraderie on the court? And I think that a lot of it honestly is going to come down to probably the way that they start. Can they get hot? Can they get hot at the beginning of the season? Can they get some confidence and some momentum? And look, you take a look at their non-con. It's a schedule that's not too difficult, but it's definitely going to have some challenges on there. You and I, we talked about it in the offseason. They're going to Kansas City. They're playing in the T-Mobile Center. And they're playing Arkansas, who's ranked 16th in the country,
yep.
right off the bat there in the CBE Classic. They might play Illinois.
They might play Illinois in that
tournament. They were a one seed last year. Arkansas went to the Elite Eight last year. So, I mean, you're talking about before Thanksgiving, possibly two juggernauts on the schedule. You look down the schedule, like they go to Wichita State. By the way, think about how that game's going to be. K-State at Wichita State. If anyone asks, if you can win one non-con game this year, what is it? It is that game in Wichita against Wichita State. I want to beat the brakes off Wichita State. But anyway, they've got Marquette at home. They go to Nebraska, have an old Big 12 matchup, former Big 12 matchup there. I mean, they have got some games on this non-con schedule that, yes, they're going to challenge them. But yes, they're also winnable. So if K-State can get some of these games and get on a roll and then win the games they're supposed to against teams like Green Bay and Oregon State and Omaha and Florida A&M and these other teams that are sprinkled in, they'll be building the resume, they'll be building the confidence, and then they can go into Big 12 play where the conference is good every year, ready, and it's going to be good again this year. You've got three teams in the top 10 preseason. KU's at 3. Texas is at 5. Baylor's at 8. Oh, and by the way, guess what? They face Texas, KU, and Baylor literally 3 games in a row at one point in the Big 12 schedule as well. So, the Big 12 is going to be brutal. But if they can get some confidence, get some momentum, and they can make some leeway in that non-conference schedule, then they'll be in a good position. But I really think this team, and it could be made or broken in that non-con. I think it's really important that they come out and have a good non-con, because the Big 12, look, we've seen it. Teams are going to beat up on each other, and you've got to get some confidence. You got to get some wins. You've got to get those types of things and build camaraderie. You got to do all that stuff in the non-con. It's important. So they've got some big games to do it. And I think that will kind of tell us a lot about those teams, how they respond in those games against Arkansas and those games against Marquette. So, Wichita State, Nebraska.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Episode 69 of Triple P. Eddie Greer, Alex Zane out there in San Diego. I'm here in the locker room in Kansas as usual for the Purple Project Podcast. Getting you all set up for KU here in just a little bit. Yeah, going over this just the non-con real quick that Alex was referring to. Let's refresh our folks' memory here. We did an episode in the offseason about that. You're spot on about that. And yes, so next week they'll welcome Florida A&M to Bram Lynch, and then the following week, it will be Omaha coming in here to bring us to take on Bruce Weber's team. And then, like Alex mentioned, Hall of Fame Classic at T-Mobile Center. Oh, baby. Arkansas, a couple of days before Thanksgiving. If you win that, yeah, you got to play either in Arkansas. Keep this in mind. They are an elite. They're coming off an elite 8 run last year. Cincinnati, Illinois was a one seed last year. Cincinnati made a deep run in the tourney last year. So if you get past Arkansas, that's going to be a tough challenge for this Bruce Weber team here. If then you got to play the winner of Cincinnati, Illinois, and oh by the way, Brad Underwood, head coach for Illinois, is on that side. So we'll see how that unfolds. But that's a couple weeks down the road in Kansas City. And then a couple days after Thanksgiving, you got North Dakota back at Bramlage. Albany a couple days later. That's the first day of December. And Alex is fired up about Wichita State. Okay. On
Eddie,
the 5th.
Eddie, we've won that game for like 10 years. Okay.
Yeah, this has been going on for a while. Yeah.
We won twice forever. I didn't think they'd ever play, but here we are.
Yep, here they are. December 5th, Wichita State. It starts. I know we did an episode about the meeting with Wichita State a while back. I think that was the first year of this podcast.
Yeah.
This will be in Wichita, in Trust Bank Arena, and I'm interested to see how that turnout is going to be, especially with K-State knows how to travel pretty well when it comes to rivalry games. And then, oh yeah, who could have ever thought of Shaka Smart, Marquette. Coming to Bramlage December 8th on Wednesday. That's going to be something right there. So Shaka Smart, obviously, for those of you who haven't been paying attention, just coming, was the head coach for Texas, jumped ship, and now back with Marquette, Green Bay, December 12th, Nebraska, and this is not the football rivalry. We're talking about basketball. Nebraska, you got to go to Lincoln for that one. December 19th.
I believe, is coaching Nebraska now.
I think so. Yeah, I think he's still the head coach for them last time.
Yeah, I think Brad Weyberg's still there.
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting there. So, yeah, you got to go against two former coaches who were in the conference, Weyberg, Iowa State, and Shaka Smart with Texas on different teams now. McNeese State comes to Bramlage on the 21st. That's a couple days before Christmas. And then after Christmas break, you got Morgan State coming to Bramlage. So, yeah, you can mark down Nebraska, Marquette, Wichita State. But, yeah, you got a chance. That little mini stretch there in the T-Mobile Center with the Hall of Fame Classic, Arkansas, Cincinnati, Illinois, K-State. That could tell us quite a bit about what this K-State team is definitely going to be about, Alex, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you what, we're going to learn a lot about them in that stretch, Eddie, and then to see that will also be a great measuring stick that, you know, we can measure however they do. And I'm 100% honest, Eddie, my expectations are not terribly high for K-State when they go to Kansas City. I think it could be a brutal couple of games for them. But who knows? Who knows? If they win, awesome. If they lose, okay. But can they be competitive? You know, can they play with these teams that have been way better than them the last couple of years? And then you can measure it against, some of this Big 12 competition a couple months later, okay? When K-State's got Texas at Bramlage, you know? How can they play them, who's a top five team, in comparison to how they played Marquette or how they played Illinois? You know, same thing with KU, same thing with Baylor, same thing with some of these other teams in the Big 12. So I think we're going to learn a lot about where they are at this point in time. And then I think that it can also kind of help serve as a measuring stick later in the season to see how much they've improved or gotten worse. Because I remember K-State a few years ago, they played North Carolina at the Sprint Center and just about won the game. And North Carolina was a top five team, and we're like, oh my gosh, this team's great. This team's going to be fantastic. And they finished like 6-12, Big 12 play. So, it could go either way, but we're going to learn a lot. You're ready. One way or the other, we are going to learn something about this team pretty quickly in the month of November here within the next couple weeks.
Yep, so that's kind of an update on where basketball's at right now. Of course, recording this 10:39 Central Time, a little bit after K-State took care of Pittsburgh State, 78-59, led by Miguel's 18 points there for K-State. So K-State starts off on the right foot there. Meanwhile, K-State on the gridiron, continuing to try to build a winning streak. They have a two-game winning streak coming into the Sunflower Showdown against Kansas, with Kansas coming off of a 55-3 beatdown, losing on the road to the 50, which was then the 15th-ranked Oklahoma State Cowboys last week. No contest there. Of course, a quarterback that they faced Last year, K-State did Miles Kendrick, went 6 of 8, 34 yards, a quarterback rating of 72 there. And he also apparently led them in rushing as well, 9 carries for 32 yards. He did that against us last year, but he didn't really go far in that game last year. Here in the cold game, here in the Little Apple, your leading receiver. I'm just going to go this angle here. Trevor Cordell, 2 catches, only 12 yards. Kwame Lassiter, he's been there forever. Two catches for only 10 yards there. Oklahoma State right now trying to get themselves set up in a spot where they can compete, or actually not compete, but get to the Big 12 title game. Meanwhile, K-State on our end took care of TCU at home last week, in which really was a defensive performance by one Felix Ndugay-Umanzada, 31-12 in this one there. TCU, I don't know what happened to them, especially when the fight broke out in the third quarter. Where was that passion before that fight? I don't know. They didn't really have much of a fight even before that. Skylar Thompson, 13 of 21, 242 through the year, which included a touchdown in this game. Daniel Imanabebe, big catch, touchdown for him. Again, I don't know why they can't just throw the ball to him more. I just don't understand.
I don't either. He's averaging over 30 yards a catch.
Yeah, that just mind-boggles me. They should. It seems like a repetitive theme when it comes to looking back and talking about these games. You know, what K-State needs to do this, they need to do that. But yes, the more important thing, they did get the win. But I mean, I've said this multiple times: is how does Courtney Messingham use these offensive weapons? And clear enough, they're not. Imanabebe ain't used enough. 90 yards in a touchdown. Deuce Vaughn continues his tremendous season. 20 carries, 109 yards. I'm looking at the statistics here from the game here. He lost 7 yards, so a net gain of 109. But still, though, over 100 yards yet again for number 22. Looking at the offensive numbers of a K-State. Ty Zittner had 3 punts in this game, average of 42 yards in the game here. I'm going to make sure I want to cover here real quick. Let's see. Chris Tennant kicked the field goal here.
Yep.
And he made it. So, Chris Tennant. So, I don't know why maybe I wasn't even paying attention, but they apparently K-State
I missed it off the bat too until a question was asked in the postgame about it.
Yeah, so there was that as well. Jarcadia Wright was on the field quite a bit in this one. No Joe Irvin. 7 carries for him, 19 yards, and Skylar Thompson added 18 on the ground as well. The defense is really shut down. Max Duggan in this one. Of course, Philly number 91 had something to do with that. Max Duggan, 9 of 13, 73 yards, sacked 4 times. Of course, that should have been 6, really. After the game, it was 6 sacks, but the NCAA...
It was 6 sacks. What a load of crap.
NCAA had to go BS and take 2 away for whatever goodness reason. So it's only 4 sacks, but Max Duggan was contained for most of the day. Now had to be one of the keys to the game for that defense, for that K-State defense to slow, contain Max Duggan. That's what they did. Chandler Morris, 9 of 14, 111 yards passing as he came in the game after a struggle. Max Duggan couldn't get it done. Keandre Miller, he also rushed over 100 yards in this one. 14 for 102, leading receiver for the Horned Frogs. Darius Davis with 4 catches, 78 yards, no touchdowns for him. Of course, he got a touchdown in garbage time for TCU me and the wife went. Emma stayed at home with our babysitter. So 31-12 your final score. K-State reels off another one. So they K-State 5-3 now overall. 2-3 in conference play. And let's give our leading tackler here some love. Here, leading tackler for K-State, Daniel Green, 9 tackles. Felix Nduke, 8 tackles with his monster game. 4 sacks, should be 6, sorry, in double NCAA. Ross Elder, 5 total tackles in this one. Cody Fletcher, also at 5. Nick Allen, your top 5 in tacklers for this game. He had 3. Timmy Horn, Austin Moore. Austin Moore had a good tackle late in this game as well. So K-State defense playing well at the right time, Alex, here, leading up to this Kansas game in Lawrence coming up. Kind of your overall thoughts on the performance for K-State, Alex?
My first thought, Eddie, was I saw one of the best performances that I've seen by a K-State player in a long time. One of the best individual performances, I should say. Felix Nduke Uzoma. Uzoma, I'm sorry, I butchered his name all the time. Felix Nduke Uzoma. he was unguardable, unblockable, nothing. Nothing that TCU's offensive line could do to stop him. He got Eddie a sack on 3 consecutive plays. Fine, you're not going to call one of them a sack because it was a strip fumble where the ball went forward, so there was technically yardage gained. So I am sorry, Felix. King Felix did too good of a job, apparently, tackling. So we're going to deduct him from his sack. Look, Eddie, technically, sure, fine, technically that is not incorrect. But I'm sorry that he's tackling too well and he's forcing fumbles, so we're going to take... look, it's a load of crap, but if you tackle the quarterback with high line of scrimmage, that should be a sack. Whether the football comes out and goes forward or not, that should be considered a sack and a strip fumble. So, I'm with you. He got 6. The NCAA can say what they want. He got 6. But look, you know, Felix, he is not happy about it. He made that clear this week. So watch out, KU, because he wants to get 7. And he wants to get 7. He wants to make up for it. And what a better team to do that against than the Kansas Jayhawks from Lawrence, Kansas, Eddie. What a better team to do it against. But, oh, my gosh, those arrogant egos over there in Lawrence. But no, he was completely dominant and unguardable. They could not do anything, and it was truly, truly a special performance that we were watching, Eddie, that in all reality, it's going to be probably many years before we see another defense, individual defensive performance like that from a player. So my number one takeaway was that performance. That performance was incredible. And watching that, witnessing it, that's why you watch, look, and that's why you watch college football. That's why you watch college sports. You watch it to be able to witness performances like that. I mean, that's it. I mean, that's it right there. That's why we love it, Eddie. That's why we love sports, is to see performances like that and to see teammates and people rally around him and feed off of his energy and emotion. And I mean, that's what it's about. That's what it's about right there. So, that was one takeaway. Another takeaway was Joe Klanderman's got his defense doing some things. That defense was really struggling, Eddie. They were really struggling. They were really in a lull. They played, well, so to be honest, they played like crap in the first half against Oklahoma State. They played like crap against Oklahoma. They played like crap against Iowa State. They played like crap in the first half against Tech. But in that second half against Tech, they locked it down. They looked as good as they looked in a long time in that second half against Tech. It's a shutout. And then against TCU, they dominated. They really, for the most part, just dominated. And look, they did the same thing last year. They did the same thing last year at TCU. They dominated TCU. I don't know if you remember that, Eddie. But down in Fort Worth, TCU couldn't do squat against the K-State defense. So maybe K-State's just got TCU's number. Maybe Joe Klanderman's got the perfect formula for them. He's got the perfect the perfect potent juice, I don't know. I was trying to think of something clever and nothing popped into my brain. But maybe he has TCU figured out. Or maybe this defense is just clicking and playing better. I think it helps. Look, we talked about the three down D, and they lost Clay Duke, and that threw off a lot of what they wanted to do because they didn't have a defensive end who had the ability and the athleticism and all those things that Clay Duke had. And I went on a whole, I'm not going to call it a rant, but I went on a, I talked about it, a tangent, I'll put it that way. I went on a tangent on last week's episode about you cannot build your defense, a defensive scheme around one player. That proves your problem. My point that you don't have enough depth. You need more depth. You cannot do that. That is not a sustainable formula. And I'm frustrated about that. But I don't think it's a coincidence that, oh, the defense is clicking now. The K-State's getting better production from defensive end. That's not just a coincidence. If K-State can get production from their ends, if they can get, I'm going to keep calling him King Felix. If they can get King Felix playing like that, Eddie, that three-down defense is going to be effective. It's going to be effective for K-State. I really think it starts up front, Bartman. You and I have talked about this multiple times, but it starts up front, and K-State's been winning battles at the line of scrimmage the last six quarters, and it's led to a lot of disruptive plays behind the line of scrimmage. We talk about that so often, Eddie. Winning that line of winning that battle up front and disrupting the play behind the line of scrimmage. It doesn't mean you got to get a sack. It doesn't mean you have to get a fumble. But you have to do something to disrupt the play. And K-State's been doing a lot better job at that. And look, K-State's secondary looks better. Surprise. That's not a surprise, people. Of course, if you're playing better up front, it's going to make your secondary look better. And now you are beginning to get production from some of those guys on the back end that you thought at the beginning of the year were going to be better, and you were seeing perform well at the beginning of the season. So, credit to Joe Klanderman. Credit to the K-State coaches. I was bashing on Joe Klanderman when the defense was, I should say bashing, but I was critical of him when the defense wasn't performing well. So I'm going to give him credit with the defense and what he's done with him the last six quarters. So that was my second takeaway, Eddie, was this defense explains, they look like the K-State defense from September that we saw. And can they keep it up? That's what I'm curious about. I think that they're going to do fine against Kansas. I'm kind of curious to see them against Bean, who's a quarterback who can really run the ball. Probably the most athletic quarterback they've gone against this year. So I'm interested about that. But aside from that, I think K-State will be able to put up a pretty good defensive performance against KU. I'm probably more eager to see kind of what they do against Letty Brown, that West Virginia offense here in a couple weeks, but that's gonna be interesting to see how they do against that potent offense that just put up 38 against that Iowa State defense who's got a really good D. So that'll be a good measuring stick for K-State, but we're not gonna jump too far ahead yet. We need to beat Neil Brown first. That was really the takeaway for me. Offensively, it was what I expected K-State to do. TCU is not a very good defensive team this year. It's not your typical Gary Patterson defensive team. You looked at where they were at the rankings. They were low. They had some injuries. There were some places that K-State could exploit, and that's what they did. You know, Deuce did his thing. Jerkady, when he was in there, did enough. TCU made some plays, but K-State was able to answer when they needed to. Was it pretty? Was it sexy offensively the entire game? No, it wasn't. It wasn't. But will it ever be with K-State offense? No, it won't. So, you know, you put up 31 points. You do what you have to do offensively. You move on. I'm with you. I think you got to find a way to get a Amadorebe in there. And they're more getting more touches. He's literally averaging over 30 yards a catch. Granted, he has two like 70-yard touchdowns, but still, he's able to make plays when he has the ball in his hands. So get the ball in his hands. That's the mean, if you can get him the ball in open field, he can make things happen. So I'm with you. You need to get the ball to him more. Skyler looks like he's able to move around a little bit more than he has in the past, so that's good to see. And then, you know, like I said, you know, the running backs continue to do what they got to do. I didn't think it was K-State's best game offensively from the offensive line standpoint. I've seen them play better, but you know, all in all, the K-State offense did what they needed to do. On to Kansas.
Yep, on to Kansas indeed. Promo Project Podcast, Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden. Yeah, so put the finishing touches on TCU. Now it's KU here in less than 48 hours. K-State goes to that, makes that short bus drive over to Lawrence here to take on the Kansas Jayhawks, who are still does not have a win. Shocker, in conference play, 0-5 heading into this matchup, and 1-7 in Lance Leipold's opening inaugural season with the Kansas Jayhawks after the lackluster Les Miles couldn't get it done. Now you have Lance Leipold in there trying to get it done.
Lance Leipold, not the joke. Les Miles, not the joke.
Yeah. So, but. And even though, yes, Kansas got ran up and down the field against Oklahoma State, remember, I'm keeping this in mind. We can't go too fast as West Virginia, because the last time Kansas was at home 2 weeks ago against third-ranked Oklahoma, and they took Oklahoma to the limit, 35-23, which kind of raised eyebrows a little bit. If I want to be honest, so the question looms, and there's a couple people already asking this already all week long. Which KU team is going to show up for this one? Obviously, last time these two teams played last year, it was a Phillip Brooks game last year with his two punt returns for a touchdown that set a new K-State record. And then we all got hyped up because we thought we were going to Big 12 championship game.
We thought we were going to Arlington.
This is a different situation.
We were getting our airfare ready.
Yep. This is a different situation. K-State needs to keep on the wins. Obviously, you're still in the middle of the stretch where you need to continue to rack up the wins. Right now, and I recently, there we go. I have the standings pulled up. K-State has ballooned. They were eighth in the conference. Now they're basically in the top half of the Big 12 now with their 2-3 record, 5-3 overall, in a win on Saturday. Alex will get them bowl eligible. That will be huge for this group after, you know, losing three in a row to start conference play. And the world's falling apart. But K-State has battled back to win two. Now you got to take care of business once again on the road. And the last time you're on the road against this team, I was there. Purple Takeover. Purple Project Podcast, folks. A Purple Takeover, literally. Probably the biggest crowd in KU football history. Literally.
KU tried to make it out as like their first sellout forever.
Yep.
You sold the game out because of K-State. I mean, it was a wave. It was just a wave of purple, a sea of purple.
Yep, and I was there. We didn't get in until really after K-State scored a first touchdown in the game. So badly.
K-State was not staffed for that type of crowd.
Yeah, badly organized.
Yes.
By the Memorial Stadium people. I'm sorry. But if you're going
to
do that...
You're not used to that many people, Eddie.
Yeah.
they don't know what to do with that many people.
Yeah, they didn't know what to do with that many people. If you're going to do something like that, if you get to that point, you got a long way to go. But if you get to that point, you got to be better prepared than that. I'm sorry, but that was just... Woo, woo.
That was bad.
But K-State, by the fourth quarter, yeah, it was all K-State fans. Yeah, you can literally hear everybody. So now, Kansas come in here last in total offense and last in total defense. Shocker there. Kansas on defense still has given up over 300 points, 350. And then on an offense that's kind of been struggling We did see Myles Kendrick last year. You just mentioned the other quarterback there, Ben, which K-State defense is going to see on Saturday. 126 points. That's 15 points a game for KU there. So K-State, if you're K-State, obviously we should be going more depth. It's plain and simple. You gotta take care of business. You can't go in there and you can't start off slow. That's kind of my main concern going into this game. If you start off on the wrong foot. You mentioned it, Alex. You start off slow against Oklahoma State. You were kind of up to the task against OU. Did not play well in the first half against Iowa State. Iowa State punched you in the mouth. Didn't play very well in the first half against Texas Tech on the road. The last time K-State was on the road was against Texas Tech 2 weeks ago. And K-State, they started out flat. And that's kind of my concern. Going into this game, yes, we've won a whole bunch of games. I came in, I don't even know what the streak is now against KU, but
it is 12. They won 12 in a row.
There you go, 12 in a row. And if you start off on the wrong foot here and give this KU team some confidence, that could spell some trouble. But
yeah,
you have to take care of business. You win the game, but if you win this game, you could basically take the pressure off. You're bowl eligible, and you can start trying to get every win after that is a pretty much a bonus for this ball club.
Yep, and you know, Eddie, you hit it kind of right onto what I was thinking. You mentioned that some people said, you know, what KU team will show up. I've heard that too, and that's not the way I'm thinking. I'm not thinking, oh, what KU team will show up. I'm thinking what K-State team will show up. If the right K-State team shows up, it doesn't matter in my mind what KU team shows up. K-State's got a better football team. They've got a coaching staff that I would take over the KU coaching staff. And if K-State shows up to play, I think that they'll be fine, regardless of what KU team shows up to play. If K-State doesn't show up to play, KU has shown with that Oklahoma game that they can sneak up. They've got enough. They've got enough playmakers. They've got enough firepower. They've got a good enough coaching staff to be able to sneak up and get you. They haven't done it yet to anyone in the Big 12, but they're capable, and they showed it against Oklahoma. Oklahoma went in there. Oklahoma was sleepwalking, and Oklahoma was able to escape with a win, but KU showed that they had that. They had that in them, and K-State cannot go in there sleepwalking, because no offense to K-State, but they're not Oklahoma. They can't go in there and just sleepwalk through a win. K-State doesn't have that type of talent. Yes, K-State has the talent to win that game if they go in and take care of business, but they don't have the talent to go in and sleepwalk through a game like Oklahoma can. KU can beat K-State and probably would beat K-State if K-State went in there and sleptwalked and they came out and they played the way they did against Oklahoma. So, you know, if anything, I think that Oklahoma game kind of serves as a wake-up call, and I hope it does, to the K-State team, as we got to take them serious. Like, we got to take them serious. We got to come out. We got to come out with energy. We got to come out focused, and we need to put them away early and not give them hope, not let them hang around. I mean, they got nothing to lose. KU's got nothing to lose in this game. All the pressure's on K-State here. K-State's got bowl eligibility on the line. K-State's got a 12-game winning streak on the line. K-State is a 24-point favorite in this game. All of the pressure is on K-State. And if K-State loses this game, if KU loses this game, oh, whoop-de-doo. If KU wins this game, they're going to be able to rub it in K-State hands for faces for years. I mean, there's nothing to lose for that KU football team. There's everything to lose for the K-State football team. So, you know, I just hope that Oklahoma game kind of got their attention, got that team's attention. And Skylar hinted at it. Skylar hinted at it. Yeah, you know, that did. That did catch our eye. And I really hope it did. And I hope they come out with that energy and the focus that is needed. I was a little less worried about it when they played KU and Lawrence a couple years ago, because Les Miles did that job for us. on his Miles Ahead show that he had, where he, you know, said, "Who is K-State?" I mean, that, yeah, we already know what happened with that. So he gave K-State the ammo. I wasn't worried about K-State going out and playing well in that game. But Muscle Eye Pulp not throwing out the ammo like that. If anything, K-State football players are throwing out a little ammo on Twitter for KU. But we've seen a couple players. Reggie Stubblefield talking to you. But
I saw that.
I'm talking to you. I see you on Twitter. I see you. I like it. Go show it on the field. So, if they can come out, Eddie, they can kind of get out to an early lead. You mentioned it. No, don't get out from a slow start. If K-State gets on a slow start, KU can get on a roll. K-State can tense up. Just go out there, play your game. Take advantage of the mismatches that you've got on the football field, and put on a show. I mean, don't even worry about putting on a show. Don't even be like, oh, we have to win this game by so many points. Oh, we've got to, let's see if we can literally win it by 90. Like, no, don't worry about any of that. Just go out, play your game, and look chips forward than me. If K-State goes out and plays their game, they're going to be fine, and they're going to get a win, and it's going to be a great Saturday, or a great Catterday, I guess you could say.
There we go.
That's right. But if K-State, sleepwalks through this game or comes in saying, let's try to score 100, or I mean, that's not gonna be conducive for success. And so, I'm eager for it. The one thing I do think K-State has going for them, interesting stat, by the way, K-State has 53 players on their roster from the state of Kansas. KU has 19. 53 for K-State, 19 for KU. There are a lot more players in that K-State locker room that this game means something to than those KU in that KU locker room. When you look at all the players from this state, the state of Kansas, you look at a guy like Cooper Beebe, who says, I was a KU fan growing up, and they were showing interest in me. But a coach told me, who's no longer here, don't come here. Like, what? What coach says that? So there's going to be, I think, more motivation from that K-State side, because you got a lot big influx of Kansas kids that know the importance of this Sunflower Showdown. And like I said, I just hope that comes down, that shows in the field, and that K-State doesn't come out flat. Could K-State come out, sleepwalk their way to a win? They could if KU comes out and plays the way they did last week against Oklahoma State. But if they come out and play against Oklahoma, no, they can't. So, as you mentioned, Ed, come out, assert your dominance early, get an early score, get an early stop, kind of put KU, kind of behind the chains before they even know what happens, and go from there. But I'm looking forward to it, and kind of eager to see what happens.
Yep. Alex and Eddie Greer for the Purple Project Podcast, episode 69 here, about to come to a close. Here's the Sunflower Showdown in Lawrence, Kansas, Saturday. This podcast will go up tomorrow, either tomorrow morning or in the afternoon at some point. But anyways, most important part, this episode will be up for you guys to get you guys ready for the Sunflower Showdown. K-State traveling to Lawrence, take on Kansas Jayhawks. Kansas Jayhawks 1-7 over in conference play. K-State looking to continue to build that momentum here. 5-3, 2-3 in the Big 12. And to get a win on Saturday, they'll be bowl eligible. Skylar Thompson, over 1,300 yards through the year. 7 touchdowns on 5 interceptions. We're probably going to see the two quarterbacks for KU. Jason Bean, almost just a shy under 12,000 yards. 6 touchdowns, 6 interceptions for him.
He can play a little bit, Eddie.
And he's second in the team in rushing with 88 carries, 88 attempts, 388 yards. He has scored 2 times on the ground. So that's going to be another good challenge for his K-State defense and Joe Klineman. We'll see. I'm definitely going to be paying to see what they do there. K-State knows what they have to do on the offensive side of the ball right there. And oh, by the way, for those of you who aren't able to travel to Lawrence for a game on Saturday, 11 a.m. kick. Oh, yeah, baby. 11 a.m. kick on FS1.
Nothing like that 9 a.m. Pacific kick, Eddie.
That's right. Yeah, at
9 I'll be Pacific. Up with my cup of coffee at 9 a.m. My time.
Yes, get your cup of coffee over there.
That's right.
And get your favorite snack salad, and we'll be ready to go for the game. So K-State will look to bump up that streak to 13. We'll see what happens there in Lawrence. Alex, any final thoughts overall here as we are about to wrap this thing up?
You know, yeah, a couple of these. The first is, I found it really interesting this week that Chris Klineman said that he was asked about the bowl eligibility, and they said, hey, I can't remember what reporter it was, but they said, with the win, you guys get to bowl eligibility. I mean, is that something you guys are talking about? Is that something, what are your thoughts on that? He said, haven't mentioned it once. We haven't talked about it once this week. They are paying no attention to the fact that they are one game away from bowl eligibility. And that was interesting to me, Eddie. That was interesting to me because, if I recall, they got their bowl eligibility 2 years ago, Chris Klineman's first year, against KU in Lawrence in that game. And it was a great win against KU, but it also got a bowl eligible. It was Chris Klineman's first game bowl eligible. They were coming off of that 5-7 season with Bill Snyder that was kind of disappointing the year before. And it was big deal they got bowl eligible. I was kind of curious what their attitude would be towards it this year because we know kind of how last year went. The team whatever their record was. Was it 4-6? They didn't play 10 games. Is that right? And they did play 10 games.
Yeah, 4-6. Yep.
Why was that right? 4-6 games. They finished 4-6.
Yeah.
Technically, they could have gone to a bowl, but you're really not bowl eligible for 4-6. I mean, come on, don't kid yourself. And they didn't go to a bowl because COVID ended up getting them, and that kind of stopped them from entertaining that. You were happy about it. So I mentioned it all the time. We can have that debate for days. But you come into this season, though, Eddie, and now you're a game away from bowl eligibility. And I was kind of curious, how important is this going to be? Is this something that they're going to be like, oh, yeah, it's a big deal. I mean, we're really happy to be bowl eligible. They weren't that way at all. If they care about being bowl eligible, what it told me, Eddie, was that they fully expected to be bowl eligible this season, and they had their eyes set on sights higher than just winning 6 games and getting bowl eligible. And so I kind of liked it. I kind of liked, Chris Klineman just saying, we haven't talked about it at all. We haven't talked about it once. We're not in a conversation that we're having. Like, I'm thinking about it, and I'm thinking about the fact of bowl eligible because they just assume, hey, we do what we do. We'll be bowl eligible. Of course we will. We're going to do bigger and better things to be bowl eligible. So I liked it. I think it's good because this K-State team a couple weeks ago was lacking confidence. You know it, Eddie. I know it. They needed a win so desperately against Texas Tech because things were just about to spiral out of control for them. And they got that win that they probably shouldn't have gotten. And they've just been able to build off of it, with that come from behind win, dominating win against TCU. Now they're going up against KU. They're feeling good. They're feeling confident. It seems like the K-State team that we saw in September. And, I'm just curious to see if they can keep it up, Go into KU, get a dominating win. Have a tough game after that against West Virginia. Don't want to look too far ahead, but you have a tough game against West Virginia. If you find a way to get that game and you're sitting at 7-3, and then you get a shot at Baylor, who could be in the top 10, coming to Manhattan, you would have never thought that Baylor would be in the top 10. You could get your shot. You could get that shot at really turning the season around. If you could, like I said, we're looking way ahead. But
way ahead, baby. Way ahead.
But if you can go into KU and take care of business, and you can win a tricky, tricky game, very tricky game against West Virginia, the stage could be set up for K-State to get that shot against another top 10 team in the Bill. And it would also be senior day as well. It'd be Skylar Thompson's last game.
Yep.
It could be against the top 10 team in Baylor. I cannot think of a better way to put a bow on things for this K-State team is if they could get a crack at a top 10 team. And, Eddie, a top 10 team that I really think K-State could beat. If they're playing confident, they're confident, they're motivated, that could really make up for a lot of kind of that stink that we have in those first three games. And you know, the K-State football team is feeling better, but I know some K-State fans are still like, I don't know how I feel about this team. So looking way down the road, but you know what, I'm not a player, so I can't. I'm a fan, and it's going to be interesting these upcoming weeks to see the way that things play out for K-State. But it starts with taking care of business against your rival and getting bowl eligible in the Sunflower Showdown. And then if you could do that, then maybe you could put your eyes on some sites that are a little bit higher and tackle some of these things that I'm talking about. But it should be a fun last month of the season. The season is flying by, Eddie. It is going so fast. It's just incredible. We're already about to be 9 games into a 12-game season after Saturday. So it's flying by, but the last month is going to be, has the potential to be a very exciting month in case they can take care of business.
Episode 69 of the Purple Project Podcast comes to a close. Couldn't say any better than that. Yep. Got to take care of business against our cross-state rival Kansas this weekend in Lawrence. Hopefully we'll do that on Saturday on FS1, 11 a.m. kick. Eddie Greer, Alex Zane, that's a wrap for another episode. And the World Series is finally done. Yes, I'm very, very happy about the Atlanta Braves winning the World Series and giving the city, the state, its second champion, fourth championship. Very happy about that. And
beat the Peters too.
Yep, they did. Mm-hmm. And now with this
on their field.
Yeah, yes, indeed. Definitely made a statement with that. So, yeah, again, yeah, I'll leave it on the field. But anyways, the Pro Project Podcast, folks, back with normal programming now, and we'll probably fit in another episode in the weeks to come. We'll see about that. But right now, obviously, the next time we'll talk to you guys, we'll be talking to Kate about this game and looking at the basketball. We'll be talking more about basketball here as we're
right.
Digging into the basketball season as well. So, Alex, go ahead and close this out again.
I'm going to close you guys out on this. The K-State basketball team, I'm going to pivot back to them. They have 4 Sunday games this year. 4 Sunday non-con games. Crazy. So get ready. Get ready for that. Get ready for K-State basketball. You're going to be watching them all days of the week, apparently. But it's time for K-State basketball. K-State football's here. Go Cats, and we'll talk to you soon.
Podcasts are found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, and more. We'll talk to you on the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.